cure or prevent any disease.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor, the talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
Oh, it's a big day. Well, maybe it's not. I'm so curious. We'll find this out, I don't know if today or tomorrow. I want to know how many people are going to go out and vote in this primary.
It feels like a low turnout day.
Low turnout. I mean, you're voting for this person or... And I know there's
and
other...
And it's going to rain.
Well, yeah, well, it's going to rain for the next 4 days, but that's besides the point. no, I mean, look, I know you're going to see other names on the ballot, but these are all candidates who have already suspended their campaigns. I'd be curious to find out, and we could talk about this tomorrow, how RFK Jr. does in Connecticut. I really, and we'll find out probably on a national level who, if he takes away votes from Biden or for Trump.
And you're skeptical that Trump, and I agree with you. I just don't see how anybody's looking at these two guys who's thinking about Trump and going, you know what? Robert Kennedy, that's my guy. I don't see
folks, it. There's nothing they have in common. Nothing. I don't understand. So you're not voting for Trump, you're going to vote for Biden. Then maybe you weren't a Republican to begin with. Robert Kennedy, when you listen to Robert Kennedy speak, okay, he's not only is he a Democrat, he's a liberal Democrat. There's no doubt about that.
And an environmentalist and the worst kind.
Well, his new running mate is evidently or supposedly this, actually, Robert F. Kennedy was on CNN last night. He told CNN that Joe Biden is a far greater threat to democracy than Donald Trump. This is on CNN last night when RFK Jr. was being interviewed. Yeah. So what does that tell you? The whole Kennedy clan, that whole Camelot family, they're not even supporting RFK Jr. They've already came out and supported Joe Biden. Anyhow, it's Gary Byron, 12 minutes after 7 o'clock, our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair, is a political analyst and editor of the news items and political newsletters. Let's welcome to the show John Ellis. John, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Glad to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about how the primary votes today will impact what's already become a two-man race for the president.
Not at all. I mean, I don't see anything happening today that will have any impact on the nomination or, you know, the results in November. I don't think Biden will do as well in November as he did the last time, but I think he'll win Connecticut and indeed all of the New England states comfortably, with the possible exception of the first congressional district in Maine.
What's going on in the first congressional district in Maine?
Well, Maine and Nebraska are the two states
right.
in the country that elect their electors by congressional district. So Nebraska 2 is one electoral college vote, and Maine 1 is electoral college vote. So, but otherwise, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Maine 2 are solidly Democratic.
Well, he won 4 years ago. Because he had a lot of the African-American vote. He had a lot of the Latino vote. He had a lot of the Jewish vote. And I think that slowly but surely that base has more or less eroded. I don't think he's been committed. I don't think he's been loyal to that sector of his base.
I think that the 2024 election is basically... If Trump is the issue, Biden will win. If Biden's the issue, Trump will win. In Connecticut, it's very hard to see how Trump can win because it's a Democratic state and his negatives are enormous. And it's likely that I don't think people are for Biden so much as they are anti-Trump.
That's a good point.
Is that enough for Biden to win Connecticut? Yes, it is.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that on a national level where they're not necessarily a Biden fan, but if they're anti-Trump, maybe that's where RFK Jr. comes in then. Because you can't sit there in good consciousness and go, oh, yeah, Biden's nailing it. He's knocking it out of the park. And, yeah, four more years of this. I mean, I know some soft Democrats that are rolling their eyes knowing that Joe Biden does not have his cognitive skills. So let's bring RFK Jr. back into this equation then. Go ahead.
Yeah, the big thing about RFK Jr. and indeed any independent candidacy is to get on the ballot in all 50 states, or at least get on the ballot in states that you can win that would add up to 270 electoral college votes. So far, he's, I think, on five state ballots. He said today or yesterday that he had qualified for North Carolina. The Biden campaign will do everything it possibly can legally to prevent him from getting on the ballot in seven states: Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Will they be successful? I think so. And so Bobby has made it as doing what he can to secure the nomination, the presidential nomination of the Libertarian Party. And if he's successful in that endeavor, then he will be on the ballot in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. And then Bobby, I don't think there's any doubt that Bobby takes votes from Biden, particularly among the 18 to 29 demographic. And I think it's also if you're a black person and you're not ready to go all the way to Trump, if you're not willing to jump from D to R, Bobby's not a bad way station. So I think, if you look at the polling, most of it nationally is within the margin of error, which means state by state that Trump is ahead. But if you look at the race nationally, Trump, Biden, and Kennedy in there, then Trump leads nationally outside of the margin of error. So I don't think there's any doubt that Bobby creates a problem. It's just for Biden, it's just a question of whether he'll be on the ballot.
I find it fascinating that RFK Jr. decided to run as a libertarian. Libertarians are, well, for the most part, they're against large government. They're for more of a free society. You know, live and let live. Do what you want. Smaller government. But Kennedy is a big government guy.
Well, I think it's a tactical decision, right? I mean, he's going to the Libertarian Party. He's saying my running mate is one of the richest women in the United States of America, from her divorce from the founder of Google. And you know, you're the Libertarian Party, and you want to juice your number in this presidential election. And we'll probably put we probably put 250 million, maybe 300 million behind it. That's better than you're going to do with your current candidate, who nobody can recognize, and the Libertarian Party doesn't have any money. Will the Libertarian Party overlook Bobby's unlibertarian views in return for a vast amount of cash? Maybe. I don't know.
What about this No Labels Party? I mean, I've been hearing Manchin's name. I've been hearing Cornel West. There's a few names, even Tulsi Gabbard. We're in April already. Does that party have legs, and have they endorsed a candidate, or do you foresee them endorsing a candidate?
Well, they have to deliver a candidate, right? I mean, they have a lot of money, and they've raised it from people on the liberal side. They raised money from Harlan Crow. who's definitely a conservative Republican. You know, so they have the apparatus. I think they say they've raised $75 to $100 million. They're hard at work on getting on the ballot in these states. But what they don't have is a candidate, and they've been turned down by Manchin. They've been turned down by Chris Christie. Liz Cheney, I think, turned them down. I don't know that for a fact. Without a candidate, nobody's going to vote for the No Labels Party. They need a candidate that has a credible story and can argue that they are a moderate, moderate independent. So until they get a candidate and until they get on the ballot in all these states, then we don't have any, we don't know.
Okay. I want to move to U.S. Senate here in Connecticut. Can you think any Republican candidate can make a dent in Chris Murphy's momentum for reelection this year?
No, I don't. I mean, Murphy, he was first elected in Congress at the age of 25. He beat Linda McMahon. I think she put up, 50 or $75 million to try and stop, to beat him in 2012. He beat her, 54 or 43, something like that. The next time was 2018, midterm election, anti-Trump election, good year for Democrats generally. He got, 59% of the vote, and he has basically no serious opposition this year. Republican National Senatorial Committee will not invest in Connecticut. The Republican National Committee will not invest in Connecticut. So it's a race that sort of has been preconceded to Murphy, and, for good reason. He's a good vote getter. Newtown is a big part of Connecticut sensibility, if you will, in the southern part of the state, southeastern part of the state. He's been very strong on gun control issues. He worked with Senator Lankford from Oklahoma on the immigration bill that failed, but nevertheless, he and Lankford did a lot of work to try and get it passed. I don't really see him being vulnerable to a challenge. The only thing that might happen is that his margin of victory might return to the 2012 level, but it's just general dissatisfaction with President Biden and the Democrats, people voting anti-Biden. If Biden's the issue, then Republican turnout may be higher, Democrats may be depressed, and in that circumstance, then Murphy's number would go to 57 or 56, but I don't think there's any chance he could lose.
All right. Stay right there. I got to take a very short break when we come back. I want to talk about something that I know that you've been researching regarding foreign hackers right after. More with John Ellis right after this.
Elevate your legacy with Daley Connerton Memorial Company. Introducing Daley Connerton Monuments, where dreams take shape in stone. Immerse in custom craftsmanship, where every chisel stroke narrates a tale. Transform memories into magnificent monuments while you cherish the past, celebrate the present, and immortalize your story in granite and marble. Let Daley Connerton carve your vision into reality, creating iconic monuments that stand as a testament to your legacy. Call Daley Connerton, 860-242-4133. Daley Connerton, where memories live forever.
No one ever likes calling their insurance company. It usually means there's a problem. And when there's a problem, you don't want to talk to a stranger. You want your agent, the agent who knows you. That's Michael Van Otterkirk and his staff at State Farm of Newington. State Farm has been the number one auto insurer in the U.S. every year since 1946. So when a problem arises, you'll be relieved to call State Farm of Newington, 860-666-1037. Because like a good neighbor, State Farm of Newington is there.
Gary Byron and Joe the producer have the pulse of Hartford. 103.3 and Litchfield, 104.5.
25 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, our guest is political analyst John Ellis. John, you You've been researching how foreign hackers could wreak potential chaos in the U.S. election this upcoming November. And you wrote an essay entitled What's at Stake, which I guess more or less answers that question with an unsettling response, right? The security, resilience, and integrity of the American election system. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the United States has been under, let me start over again. The United States was long the leader in computer hacking. The NSA was the gold standard. Everything else was tin. And so we had this enormous edge in terms of our capabilities. It was called the capabilities gap, and we were on the good side of that. And then Ed Snowden, the leak of all the NSA data, essentially closed the capabilities gap. China invested a lot in it, in cyber hacking. Russia did, Iran did, North Korea did. And lo and behold, suddenly, what are called zero days, which are worms, if you will, inside of software that can control systems like utilities and nuclear power plants or AT&T's customer information. And so China especially has been embedding a lot of zero days in U.S. infrastructure, both private and public, as have the Russians, as have the Iranians, as have the North Koreans. And so the question is, are they embedding worms, zero days, into public infrastructure related to the election?
But how is it getting there? How is it even getting into the software? Because we're buying the software overseas? Is that what it is?
No, you have. So if you, let's just say that you have an Apple iPhone, and the operating system of the Apple iPhone is iOS. Okay.
Yep.
And somewhere in that code, there's a mistake. There's a gap. And so a very clever hacker can find out what that gap is and exploit it and get in there so that it can find out what your camera's doing, who your contacts are, what your phone calls are, what your text messages are, etc. And until that flaw, if you will, in the software is revealed, Apple cannot apply a patch to fix it, right? So the reason it's called zero days is because it renders the software, the protection of the software inside of an Apple iPhone, it renders it ineffective until Apple finds out about it. So that's called a zero day. And there are zero days now all through U.S. public infrastructure and private infrastructure. The most recent, obviously, was the pilfering of all of the customer data from AT&T, one of the largest cell phone, mobile phone providers in the world. And though the question is, will these zero days have an impact on the U.S. presidential election?
Well, is that what happened 4 years ago? I only have less than a minute left. Is that what happened 4 years ago? Or
no, four years was very, very, very secure election. This one, most people think, is not going to be secure. And the reason for that is that 45% of the vote is cast either by mail or absentee. And it's believed that these people, these hackers, can get inside of the voter rolls, etc., and impact the outcome of the election in seven states.
Okay. John Ellis, a political analyst, editor of the News Items and Political Items newsletter. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. All right. When we come back, It's open phones. All our lines are open. Just waiting to hear from you. Are you going to vote today? Or did you already vote? Or do you not plan on voting at all? Yeah, first Tuesday of the month, we always have the chief meteorologist at News Channel 8. He just does about a 15-minute time with us. We're about 4 minutes removed from Joe Fury. In the meantime, though, I wanted to mention once again, this is today, April 2nd. It's National Autism Awareness Day. Okay. And I guess today only over at Mooyah in Newington. By the way, Mooyah is on Fenn Road in Newington. Very easy to get to. It is literally right off of Route 9.
Yes.
In Newington. And you get off at Central Connecticut State, you could walk. I mean, that's how short of a distance that you are to Mooyah. But listen to this, okay? Mooyah, Fenn Road in Newington, they're hosting Connecticut's first Autism Eats event. Kind of a unique experience. It's going to offer families, you know, a welcoming space to connect and dine together. There's a tailored menu and accommodations for sensory sensitivities. Now, let me give you the particulars on this, because there's actually a kind of like a fixed menu just for you, all right? The dinner includes a burger buffet. Now, I'll tell you why this is good, because every time I walk into Mooyah, there's a different burger that I want to, I'm like, oh, man, I want that. Oh, I want that. Oh, I wonder what that would taste like. Like the jalapeno burger, the mushroom Swiss burger, you know, I mean, the barbecue burger. And of course, they have regular burgers here and everything. But there's, and I'm only scratching the surface. There's so many of them. Well, obviously, I'm only going to eat one burger. But I've got this curiosity. So this, I think this will give you an opportunity to try them all. Find out what you like. That way, going forward, you'll know what you'll want to order next time. So there's a burger buffet, chicken tenders, fries, you know, in case you don't like the burgers or you don't eat burgers or you just want a little variety on your plate. Soft drinks, of course, the whole 9 yards. There's also gluten-free options. Now, it's all for $18 a person. And again, the proceeds are going to autism. So, but you do have to register. You can't just show up. I'm trying to find out the hours of this. It's probably dinner time, right? I don't think that's probably the only thing we don't have on here. I don't know if this is going on all day. Is it lunch and dinner or is it just dinner? But it's $18, and you got to register online at autismeats.org/events, okay? And I've eaten at Mooyah. I've had a number of their burgers. Actually, you know what? I love their fries, too. Oh, my goodness. I've actually gone to Mooyah and just gotten fries. And but their burgers are spectacular. Oh man, I'm getting hungry now. Yeah. No, you think I'm kidding? I'm not.
No,
just
I definitely
that.
Don't. I'm with you though. I'm very excited about that. They actually invited me and my daughter to go over there, and I still, unfortunately, I don't see a time. I don't see a time when this would be.
So, is this all day for lunch and every, or is this?
It must be, because they were doing it this morning too. We were supposed to have somebody come on that would talk about this, and they weren't able to coordinate that, unfortunately. And so, but because it's autism and it's Newington, I was like, Gary and I, we're gonna jump all over this. That's why.
Like, do we show up? Do we show up at like 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and?
Let me email this woman here who got the wheels in motion, and we'll see. My daughter did a really cool thing, an autism flies, a couple of months ago.
What is that?
They were basically taking kids that have autism, and my daughter's pretty high-functioning, but she still struggles at times, but just getting kids on airplanes. They would literally have the kids board an airplane just so that they could see what that experience is like. There's a lot of standing and sitting and... So it was especially if you're ever going to take a kid with autism on a flight, this was a good way to sort of give them that experience, right? So that in the future, if you do fly, be a little bit easier. And my wife and daughter were interviewed by Joe Fury's co-worker, Sarah Cody, and they were on the news, which was pretty neat.
I worked with Sarah Cody at Fox 61. Of course, I worked with Joe Fury at Fox 61 as well. So
well traveled, those two.
Yeah. Oh, that was cool. Actually, that's ideal so that they don't start getting nervous or anxiety on an actual flight. You take them in this. Look at that.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience.
How often do they have these?
This Autism Eats thing, they're doing a lot more of these different events, again, with the idea of, you know, putting these kids with autism in places that sort of favor some of the issues and make it a little more tangible for them to go out and do things on their own, which is excellent.
All right.
So thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure. And I'll give them one more announcement maybe in the 9 o'clock hour. I just figured since we're waiting for Joe, I would mention it again. And let me try to reach him and see what's going on. There we go.
Here he is.
Oh, we got him now. All right. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair spends a few minutes with us the first Tuesday of every month. It's funny because it was a segment that started with Bruce DePriest many years ago when I was with Brad. And it actually blossomed. We didn't know it was going to be temporary at the time, but you'd be surprised how much people are really into weather. For me, and I make no secret about this, it's really the only reason I tune into the local news is to check out the weather. Let's welcome into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair, chief meteorologist at News Channel 8, our old good buddy, Joe Fury. Joe, good morning.
Gary, good morning.
Hey, brother, how are you?
Yeah, talking about my best buddy, Brucer.
Yeah, well, I was giving a little lead in. That's, you know, what's kind of funny is that when I was with Brad Davis in the morning, and we had Bruce DePriest, that segment that we had with him was just like every, I don't know, once a quarter, once every few months or something like that. And it got so popular that we made it once a month, you know. And you know about more than anybody else. People are really into the weather. There are people who really only turn into the news. They tune into the news because of the weather, you know.
Yeah, well, think about it. It affects everything we do, and in a world now where we continue to warm and we continue to find much more extreme weather conditions. Every time a storm comes along, it's dumping 2-3 inches of rain. We've had 70+ inches since July, and the hurricanes are bigger, the ocean waters are warmer, the idea for who knows what's happening next is always there. So you got to keep on top of it. So hopefully we can give you an accurate forecast, and that's the biggest challenge.
I was looking at your forecast for the next several days, and oh my goodness, you want to talk about rain? And I know it's April. I know that's typical April weather, but haven't we had enough rain, Joe?
It's ridiculous. I mean, we just come off the second wettest March in the last 119 years. We have had, when you look at, in the rain bucket since the 1st of July, numbers that are out of sight, up and over 70 inches, 74, 75. It's really hard, Gary, because there are some, with basements and so forth, the water table's so high, the ground's so saturated, the water is a big problem for some. And the farms, of course, the rivers, we've had the Connecticut River flood in July, December, and again in March. So you're talking about getting into the farming season here. How are we going to do? Because we've had 2 to 3 feet of snow last week up north. Now another 1 to 2 feet coming from Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine. Wow. That Connecticut River is going to be poised to be coming up at some point as we warm up. As a matter of fact, next week we could be in the 70s by the middle and end of next week. So there's some great weather coming up next week, but we got to get through this next storm. Another inch and a half, maybe 2.5 inches of rain. It starts this afternoon. It's around right through into Thursday morning. The high elevations of Connecticut may be getting coated up with some snow and ice, especially tomorrow night into Thursday morning. The feel around here as we go on through the rest of this week and into the weekend will be the umbrella, the raincoat, heavier jacket. But by Sunday and Monday, going to be fantastic. And, of course, Monday is eclipse day, and I think we've got some fantastic viewing weather, of course, with the proper viewing equipment.
All right, let's talk about the eclipse in one second. Did I understand something right about it? Are we expecting snow flurries tonight or tomorrow morning, or did I hear that right, or was I half sleeping?
Oh, no, we're expecting it should be more than flurries. It'll be highly elevation dependent situation coming up here, Gary, especially tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow night, to Thursday morning. They get up in the Norfolk and Colebrook areas in northern Litchfield County, and they can be in their own world in terms of having some accumulating snow and slippery conditions going into Thursday morning, come down lower in elevation, and it'll be a much different story on the wetter side. So it can be a real wintry mess for the highest elevations, but the idea for most of the area, it's just the more rain that we don't need and in essence can't handle. And, you know, down the road here, you know, you get all this water that's standing out there, the mosquito season, we're going to have helicopters flying around out there because I think it's going to end up being a horrible mosquito season and pollen season coming up too.
If you remember last summer, it seemed like it rained almost every weekend. It was a very wet summer. Is this, the rain that we had, you said it was the wettest in 119 years in March. We're already starting off April, with 4 or 5 days consecutively of rain. Is this a precursor to what we should expect this summer? Do you anticipate, in other words, another wet summer?
Oh, that's a great question, Gare. We're trying to find some changes in the pattern down the road here. Overall things aren't changing, and so the thought is it's going to be a hot summer coming up. So certainly have the heat, but then again, the humidity that can be there as well. But the last summer was horrendous. When you're talking about a foot or more of rain falling back in July, for instance, and of course the flooding and the farms getting wiped out and so forth. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that we don't have something like that happening. But what we do worry about is that as we head for later in the summer, that the hurricane season is going to be extremely active. When you look at the warm waters, you look at the fact that we're coming out of El Nino and heading for La Nina, which usually means that we're having an increased tropical season that you get a big tropical weather system up here. We're due for a hurricane here, and each and every year that comes along, we keep our fingers crossed it won't happen, but we get greatly concerned, especially in a season, tropical season that's coming up, that something's going to come up here and get us sometime later in the summer.
All right, let's talk before we talk about the great weather that we're expecting next week. You said Monday is an eclipse. Is it true that you should never look directly into the sun during this eclipse? And tell us about this eclipse. What time will it occur? What's the do's and the don'ts when it comes to this?
All right, Gary. Yeah, the only time you could look at the sun, if it's in totality, in other words, the moon is entirely covering the sun, that only lasts about 2 to 3.5, 4 minutes, and the places you're going to find that are out of Texas on up through Indianapolis, and then places Buffalo, Rochester, across up to Burlington, Vermont. That's your totality. So you want to see the totality, the 2 to 3.5, 4 minutes of totality where the sun is completely covered. You got to go a little north of here. We're going to be about 92-93% here in Connecticut. So no, you cannot look at it with the naked eye. You've got to have the proper equipment, the proper glasses on to take the view. Otherwise, you are going to pay the price, and you could have some serious damage to your eyes. The time period for this, we're starting at about somewhere around 2:30 in the afternoon, and we're talking about the 93% or so around 3:27 in the afternoon. By 4:30, it's over. It's all happening during the mid-afternoon on Monday, April 8th. Right now, it looks like it's going to be sunny.
In other words,
a clear sky. We're hoping there's a little system that's going to be moving nearby. But for now, we're keeping our fingers crossed that we'll have a great view, again, with the proper eye equipment on. And then 60s. So being outside is going to feel good. And we could be 70s in the middle and end of next week. And
yeah.
Next week, a whole lot better than this week.
All right. So that's kind of what I wanted to lead into. And you actually answered my what was going to be my next question. It's like, well, with all this rain and overcast skies, would it even be relevant on Monday? But as you said, it'll be sunny. So let's talk about the weather going into next week, and maybe we will end with your long range forecast for the remainder of the month, maybe, or going into the spring. Let's talk about next week first, though. You really had my attention when you said you anticipate some 70 degree weather midweek next week. Talk about that. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we're talking here what's going to be, nice little high pressure ridge that'll build in, the spring and the pollen season has been a solid week or more ahead of schedule. You know, the cherry blossoms coming out down in New Haven, Worcester Square, they're coming out in another 3 or 4 days ahead of schedule. That was the case down in D.C. So the bottom line is you throw 60s and 70s in here with all the rain that we've had, we're going to, see the landscape really pop. Pop the pollen count up. Landscapers are going to be out cutting the grass, and we're looking. We're coming out of a March that came in close to 7 degrees above average. So one of the warmest Marches on record, wettest Marches on record. What we want to do now? Yeah, we'll take it warmer. That's great. Just keep the rain away. So we've got to deal with this system here. There are signs that down the road, after we get by this next storm, that maybe things will be quiet for a while. And April coming in above average with temperature, and then down the road above average will be the case May right through July, August, with the big hope that we don't have to deal with the kind of rains that we did last year. Don't have a good handle on that yet, but certainly, with the warm conditions out there, again, you're going to have the threat down the road for a tropical weather season that could be out of sight, and so that'll be our big concern down the road. And of course, the severe weather season coming up. Always be careful outside in thunderstorms, lightning. That's something that's extremely dangerous and can be a killer.
Well, you said something a few minutes ago about having an active, hurricane season this year. If I remember correctly, a year ago, you had the same, trepidation towards it, and we kind of got through unscathed for whatever. Listen, I'm not complaining. Knock on wood. I'm happy. But why do you think that we could potentially have an active hurricane season this year?
We already have water temperatures, Gary, out in the main development region in the Atlantic, for instance, that are up near 80 degrees. So the water temperatures, not only out in the development regions of the Atlantic, for instance, are very high and way above where they should be, but even along the coast, down along the southeast coast, the Gulf. The bottom line is the waters are extremely warm already. So as we get through the summer, those water temperatures will warm even more. That's the fuel to get these storms to get going, and then that's also that very warm water, 90 degrees, that's going to make these storms, enormous in nature and powerful. And, you don't have El Nino, which tends to add shear into the tropical Atlantic and knock the storms down. We had El Nino last year, and that didn't help. Well, the storms went crazy because they had such warm waters. And so the thought is that the water temperatures are way out of sight, way above where they should be. The storms are going to be bigger. We see that all the time right now with there's increased water vapor in the atmosphere from the big Hunga Tonga volcano. Take a look. Research that back January in 2022. I know I've talked about that before, but it's fascinating to see what that did to the overall world climate. So, there's so many factors in play here, and extreme. That's it. There's no such thing as normal. It's extreme weather. Plan on it. It's going to continue to happen.
Two quick questions. Number one, really fast, I got to wrap this up in about 40 seconds. Can I put my winter shovel away?
You know what? It was, back on this date, 1997, we were digging out from 1 to 2 feet of snow. I would say down the road, when I look at everything, this storm here, for some up in the hills, and especially just to our north, they're going to have the shovels out, the plows out. It's going to be a big snowstorm coming up with this next one here. But we're just missing it for the most part in most of Connecticut. But beyond this one, we're in great shape.
All right. And the sun is setting later now. I love it.
Good morning.
You're concerned about. Of course,
today,
any business owner would be, and any landlord would be.
Into
all right. Joe, we'll talk to you next month, buddy. Thanks.
Per
What, per person,
you got it.
Right?
Open phones are next.
One per citizen and then one per taxpayer. And it's crazy. The debt per citizen is $101,000, and the debt per taxpayer, and I'm in the taxpayer crowd, is $266,000. Now, when we talked about this in November, it was $230,000. So my debt's gone up $30,000. I don't think my life is any better than where it was. But so it's like having two ex-wives. One you're just finishing or halfway through alimony, and the next one you're going to start with. Because I owe for a person and a half, I don't even know.
How does this get accumulated?
By the debt they keep spending.
So the national debt. The
national
debt
has gone up $30,000.
$33 trillion or something like that, $34
trillion. $30,000 per taxpayer since November.
November.
So you think we can afford? We got, what, 200 more days?
All right, well,
to the election?
No, obviously it's not sustainable. But, what's the end game here?
The end game here is drill and sell our oil and pay our debt off.
We'll never pay our debt off.
Oh, we would with oil. We could be the largest producer of oil in the world.
Well, we could. No, you're right. We could. Right. We have more oil here than any other nation, right? Including Saudi?
Including Saudi, yeah. Because we haven't burned ours. We've burned all theirs. Now it's time for us to pump. And before, you know, eventually oil is not going to be the product that it is. There's going to be alternative sources, solar, electric. There's always but it's not here yet. But in 10 years, that technology will be 10 times better than where it is. It's like Bulova Accutron. Bulova came out with the Accutron watch in the 60s, and it was the most popular battery-powered watch out there. And they developed a quartz watch, but it was so big, it would have been Big Ben on your wrist. And they sold it to the Japanese, and the Japanese reduced it and made Seiko and became the number one world supplier of watches in the world. So the technology is there. It's just not where it needs to be yet.
So, and that's what the Democrats are saying. They're saying, well, we don't want to implement electric vehicles right now. We're looking at 10 years from now.
Well, maybe. I think we'll be in hydrogen. I don't think electric will
be the
thing.
And we've said that many a times on the show as well.
Yeah.
If we can forgive college debt, tuition forgiveness, and we're printing money, first of all, why can't we just settle our own debts?
Well, I have no idea. I don't think our money is worth anything. That's why you see gold hitting a record number every day. Every day it sets a new record. The futures are up $30, $40.
What about the what are you hearing up as far as credit card debt is concerned?
No, that's through the roof, too.
$1 trillion in credit card debt we have nationally.
Yeah. Well, that's what's keeping the banks alive is the interest rate, that the interest they're collecting. Otherwise, the banks would all be in trouble because they're not writing mortgages.
Well,
just think about it. If you're only selling 20% of the houses in the market that you sold 5 years ago, because that's all that we're selling right now, that means that there's 80% of mortgages are not happening. So how are the banks staying in business? Because they stay in business by pushing money out and writing loans, by getting points, by doing everything else. So the banks are surviving on credit card debt.
But there's no end in sight to this.
No, there's no end. Well, there's not going to be an end in sight.
So if we don't drill, how high are we going to take our national debt? $34 trillion, $35 trillion,
until
what?
We're going to take it until it tumbles, which is what they want it to do. And they want to switch over to a digital currency so that they can shut it off. Oh, COVID is happening. Boom, you're off.
But a digital currency wouldn't just eliminate our debt.
No, because
debt is debt.
Debt is debt. You file bankruptcy. If you can't pay your debt, you're out of business.
I don't think a nation could file bankruptcy, though.
I don't know. We're going to find out. We didn't think a nation could have a guy that has Alzheimer's running it either.
But we all know who's really running the country.
Yeah.
It ain't him.
No, it's not him. No.
Did you see how they want to introduce something? Should Biden win, they want to introduce something called Obidencare, which is very similar. Remember, the three of them got together last week for a big fundraiser in New York.
Yes, right, yeah.
And they want to. This is all on the. I guess it's based on Obamacare,
right?
But of course, Obama's not in office. Well, not. I'm using air quotes. He's not in office.
They are grasping at straws to get any base back. They've lost all their bases because they can't. He's tried to be the president for everything giveaway. Okay, he's given away to migrants, which is aggravating, the minorities or the people that are poor that live in this country. Okay? He is defunding the police but making our communities unsafe. Okay? He's supporting the war against Hamas, but he's aggravating all the Palestinians. So, and now he's backpack. He can't, he's trying to be a neutral party to everybody. You can't be. You got to be a president and you got to be a leader and you got to take the guff when the guff needs to be taken. You got to do what's best for the country, not what's best for your political views.
Everybody was thinking 4 years ago, Trump coming off a very, very popular 4 year term.
Right.
Like turning the nation around and becoming energy independent. They thought it was going to be hands down. He was going to be victorious. And then we saw what happened. Are we setting ourselves up in a similar way for?
I don't think this time. No, I don't. I think the people have had enough. They've had the choice between 4 years of Biden and 4 years of Trump, and they got to decide: was their life better? I can tell you, every Friday at the grocery store, they have decided that life under Trump was better.
Despite Trump not being all warm and fuzzy, and
well, he's been staying away from the mean tweets.
True. All right, George Agnelli. Good. How's always good stuff from you, man. Always. We'll talk next Tuesday. When we come back, former Republican-endorsed candidate for Secretary of State, Dominic Rapini, will be with us. I hope you choose to be as well.
Or visit Prevnar20.com.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor, the talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
So the big deal, today is a big day, or is it? You know, a lot of for the Secretary of State, I guess that's a big day because you have your polls that are open. Some people have been saying, well, polls have been open since last Tuesday, a week ago. And but I think there's going to be a higher volume today because today is actually the Connecticut primary day, right? I mean, over the last week, it's just been that, what do you call it there? Anytime voting.
Yeah. Anytime.
Anytime voting. Hey, vote early, vote often. That's the Democrat mantra. But so the big question is, are you the registered voter of Connecticut? Are you going to go out and vote in a primary in which, for all intents and purposes, there's already an endorsed candidate and really no challenger that hasn't suspended their campaign? Yes, I know there's Nikki Haley's name is on there. Ron DeSantis's name is on there. But they've suspended their campaign, right? Same thing with Democrat candidates. So there's other Democrat candidates that are on the list, including that Turkish guy there.
Sink.
But they've suspended their campaigns, even though they're on the ballot. So there's already, you know, a presumptive winner in each side. So, in other words, it's going to be Biden and Trump. Would that prevent you from heading out today? I don't mean in November. I mean today's Connecticut, the primary. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 12 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. Our next guest into the Daley Connerton Memorial Company interview chair was the Republican-endorsed candidate for Secretary of State. He knows a thing or two about this. We don't have him live in studio this morning, so he will not, unfortunately, be able to take your questions at the bottom half. But that's because it's for a good reason. He's out at various polling locations helping out and I guess keeping a watchful eye on things. Let's welcome back to the show Dominic Rapini. Dominic, good morning.
Oh, hey, Gary. Good morning, and thanks for taking the call today. To be clear, last week I was going around the different early voting locations to see the process, how things are going. Today I'm actually working as an election official. I'm a moderator because there is a shortage of people that can work elections, particularly in the month of April, you know, and so they needed people, registrars were desperate for help, and I raised my hand and said I'd do it. So that's why I'm not with you in person, but I'm also gaining valuable knowledge.
Really? What are you learning? I mean, I thought you've already, you're so well versed in this. I mean, you were running for Secretary of State. What are you learning now or today that you didn't know prior to this primary season?
You know, the first thing you always have to, you know, I think in any endeavor, you have to always take the approach that I'm always going to learn something, right? You got to, sometimes it's just enforcing reinforcing your muscle memory
okay.
on how to do stuff, how to set up tabulators, and how to coordinate with all the volunteers, and I'm meeting people that are Republican Democrats that are my working staff today, and I'm just developing great insights. I'm meeting voters, you know, firsthand today, and I'm not talking about with them at how they vote. But I'm just, you know, I just chat with them a little bit and, hey, what brought you in today? And, you know, one thing I learned from voting people voting is, you know, why are you voting today when it's already seems to be a done deal? And people are very adamant that this is how I participate in this democracy. If I want to be a citizen of this country, and I'm paraphrasing different people right now,
mm-hmm.
Then I have to show up. Right. And I have to exercise, you know, my voting muscles, if you will. And I think that's a very important point. And I would say to every one of your listeners today, if you're a registered Republican or Democrat, get out today and vote and show your support for either one of the candidates, Biden or Trump, or Mary Williamson, if you will, or uncommitted, if you're not excited about your choices. But, you know, just prove to remind yourself that you worked really hard, and a lot of people have died and given the ultimate sacrifice so that we could vote on today's like today. Mm-hmm. So let's honor them by getting out there and doing this.
You know, you bring up the other option, which I find intriguing, which is unsure, or what did you call it? Uncommitted?
Yeah, uncommitted.
Okay, uncommitted. Let's say a voter was uncommitted. They couldn't decide who to vote for. I give them a lot of credit for just coming out and voting uncommitted. I mean, if you're most people I know that are uncommitted, that's the reason why they stay home, you know, or they're like, I'm not committed either way. I don't care. I'm not going.
You know, it's actually a play on words, Gary, because if you vote uncommitted,
you're committed.
You're committed to something.
Yeah.
You know? And that's as important a statement to make as a voter as picking the candidate that you want, whether it's, you know, Haley or DeSantis or Mary Williamson.
So talk to me about exit polling. We hear this term all the time, both locally and nationally. What is exit polling? How is it conducted? What questions are asked? And are there any people who decline being asked or answering questions?
Yeah, and I'm not officially surveying people. I'm just doing it casually today. But here's the difference. Coming in, you as people are approaching the polls, you cannot approach them within 75 feet of the door.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And believe me, there's no campaign operators out today like you normally see. Because that is, once you're inside, and I make this as a big point with all my people who work for me, and I think registrars do this across the state, is there is no electioneering. You're not allowed to influence. You can't wear a Trump button or a, you know, Build Back Better button. You can't do any of that stuff inside. But when people leave, after they've cast their vote and they put it through the tabulator, when they walk out, it's fair game. And the exit polling is asking them, hey, how did you vote? You know, how did you vote on that constitutional amendment? What candidate did you vote for? And that's a very powerful tool that you can use to understand after people vote, what direction things are going. And sometimes this is how you see these some of these news networks are able to rapidly call some states in favor of one candidate or another, because based on their exit surveys, you say, oh, everyone voted for Clinton. Everybody voted for Trump, you know, and the math bears out pretty well. So that happens on the way out of the poll.
All right. So we talk every now and then about what it's costing the town. In other words, the municipality, not the state. It wasn't a funded mandate. It was an unfunded mandate that the state inflicted on our towns. How much is it costing the towns to conduct this this primary, not just, I don't mean just for today, I mean the week that led into today. Because remember,
yeah,
they started last Tuesday.
Yeah, the early voting is a separate, you got to work on
right,
two separate
right.
buckets, right? Because no matter what, we would be manning the polling stations today. So, you know, I surveyed, you know, about a dozen different registrar voters' offices and to get numbers. And most of them average around $1,800 is what they spend per day to open up one polling place in their town. Some as low as $1,000, some spend $2,500. You're paying for the people, the staff, the facility. Sometimes they're paying rental. Sometimes you're paying for you're taking part-time registrar voters, you know, two of them, a Republican and Democrat. And now you got to pay them full-time for, you know, 5 or 6 days that normally we're not budgeted for, right? So when you all add all that up, I'm using an estimate of $1,800 per town, right? Doesn't sound like a lot, except when you now take that times 169 towns, right? That comes out to each day of early voting is costing around $304,000 per day.
Oh my goodness.
For just as a municipal expenditure. So on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, for example, these towns all spent $912,000. And you know that was for only 13,476 voters. Right? In other words, for every ballot cast, for every vote, they spent $68 for every ballot. It's an enormous amount of money. Okay.
Were there certain days that were more popular than others? Like people say that Thursdays are more popular as opposed to a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Do you have any data on that?
Yeah. So far, what I saw here in Connecticut, our first time ever doing this, it was the inverse of true, Gary. So the biggest day was Tuesday, around 5,700 voters. Right. Then Wednesday, it dropped down by 1,200 to 4,400 voters. And then we dropped down on Thursday, was the lowest day so far of the week, of 3,200 voters. So we dropped between 22 and 26% per day. So the more days we voted, the less people showed up to vote.
Okay? Those numbers are statewide, right?
Those are statewide numbers.
Okay.
And from the Secretary of State's office. Now, Saturday, we don't have official numbers yet. But we believe it was around 5,000 people voted on Saturday in the day off. So that's kind of a good thing, because that's what the expectation was, that more people would vote on a Saturday. That's kind of the promise of early voting. So the big story here is that we're spending a lot of money per ballot. Now, compare that to a general election, where I estimate we spend $2 to $3 for every vote, right? So we're spending 26 times more money for early voting so far. Now, listen, for all the listeners, I know this is not the most perfect test, right? It's a presidential primary. We already know who the candidates are. It's our first time early voting. But we need the data here so we can start understanding where we go forward. Now, one of the things I'm going to be talking about is that, you know, maybe we don't need early voting for every election. Right. Maybe we don't need 4 days for a primary. I think the primary in August could be 7 days. My prediction is it's going to be a horrible waste, a colossal waste of time and money.
Well, it's 14 days leading into the general election in November. Dominic, stay right there. I got to take a short break. We're going to come right back with Dominic Rapini right after this.
Leaking roof? Casanova Remodeling specializes in installing, replacing, or repairing roofs. Protect your investment with experienced craftsmen for quality roofing solutions. The experts at Casanova Remodeling have mastered installation techniques with asphalt, wood, copper, or standing seam. Rest easy knowing you have qualified professionals working on your roof. Quality without compromise. With a certified Select Shingle Master. Ask about their lifetime 5-star manufacturer and workmanship warranty. Casanova also offers Gutter Topper. CasanovaRemodeling.com.
When shopping for appliances, where do you stop first? A big box store? They might be your first stop, but Ferrari's Appliance will be your last. From laundry to dishwashers, stoves to refrigerators, Ferrari's Appliance has all the name brands at the price you can afford. And they install and service everything they sell. Enough with the pushy salespeople and impersonal customer service. Head to Ferrari's Appliance in Newington or Naugatuck and discover why people from all over choose them over everyone else. Online at Ferrari'sAppliance.com.
Stay connected through the day. The Talk of Connecticut. Coming up, Mike Gallagher, 10 to noon. Dan Bongino from noon to 3. And Sebastian Gorka on the drive home. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3, Hartford.
24 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, our guest, Not in studio for the full hour, like he always is every other Tuesday when he's with us. He's actually out working. He's working as a moderator at the polls. We're talking Dominic Rapini. What town are you in, actually, Dominic?
Oh, I'm in the town of North Haven.
Okay. What's the turnout like today? Today, specifically.
Yeah, it just in this precinct, which is pretty much the same in all the precincts that are calling in, we're getting about 8 people an hour. Eight or nine an hour.
And North Haven. I mean, that's a. The population of North Haven, it's got to be. You know, what do you got? Like 50,000 people in that town.
Well, yeah, and probably 30,000 registered voters. You know, the way to look at it, Gary, is every polling precinct usually accommodates 4,000 voters, right? So this polling place has a capacity for 4,000 voters. But remember, it's only Republicans and Democrats today, no unaffiliates, right? So that's half. You're at half strength right off the bat, right? So this precinct, I think, should have had about 1,300 Democrats and about 800 Republicans. Right. So it's just and so far we've, you know, under less than 30 people, you know, by mid morning. So it's pretty light. You know, there'll be probably a big uptick, you know, before we close at 8 o'clock. But it's a long day, you know, and we're not getting a ton of people. And I don't expect we would. I think people should be coming out here and voting. But, you know, I think a lot of people are saying, you know what? We already know who the two candidates are. I'm going to do something else.
So Joe, the producer, just slipped me a note saying that there's less than 25,000 people in North Haven. People, not voters. I mean, but people. In other words, ages. Wow, it was a lot less than what I thought.
Yeah.
Why do you think turnout is so low? Is it because it's a foregone conclusion that we already have our presumptive winners? I mean, it's Biden and Trump.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lot of people actually know there's an election today. Every municipality is putting up signs and there's big boards in front of every school voting, you know, coming. They put up stuff on websites. But, you know, people are just, they're just not accustomed to voting in April.
Well, hold on a second. You bring up an interesting point. Now, is voting occurring today and for today's Connecticut primary? Is it in the normal polling locations as you would see in November's general election, or has it been condensed to one central location for the entire town?
Really, that's a really good question. So for early voting, it was condensed into one location, and it was conducted with your ballot was put into an envelope like you do for absentee ballot voting, and then it's not tabulated until today, right? Today it's a normal election in the normal precincts that you'll be voting in November, right? You're the same town precincts, and they're open throughout the town, and quite frankly, if I was a legislator, I would make sure I would try to give towns the flexibility to condense this to one location to save money. And then you can still get the word out to everybody. You're going to vote in one spot. But right now it's the same number of locations as it is. I think there's 5 locations in North Haven, for example, and it's just like it'll be in November.
Okay. So what's the takeaway from this? Connecticut has a primary. You're voting, but it's only Republicans and Democrats. If you're independent or unaffiliated, you're not coming out, and it's not for you.
Right.
There's already a presumptive winner for each party. There's the two endorsed, meaning that there's already endorsed candidates of Biden and Trump. Why am I coming out to vote then?
Well, like I said at the beginning, to exercise your democracy muscles.
Okay, so for that reason, and that reason alone, it's not going to really is it fair to say it's not going to impact the winner?
It's not going to impact the winner.
No.
But you know what? If you're a Trump voter, you want to show Trump all the support you have in Connecticut.
Okay.
If you're a Biden voter, likewise.
Yeah.
Or if you're a Biden voter, you may want to say, I'm voting for the other guy. Right? Those messages can still be loud and clear. Okay? But the big takeaway here is that I want to get a conversation with our legislators to go back to the drawing board and say, hey, you know what? Let's not mandate all these early voting days for primaries and presidential preferences.
Yeah, I agree. We don't need early voting all the time. No.
We don't need it all the time. No. Let's keep the 14 days for the presidential race. That's fine. But 7 days for the primary in August is going to be a disaster. And I've been
really quick, really quick.
Comments. Yeah.
We only have about 10 seconds.
From veteran registrars who are mostly, part-time, they're very negative on this.
Oh, of course they are. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not what they signed up for.
Dominic, I got to let you go, man. Our time is over. Good luck, and we'll see you in studio in 2 weeks. How about that?
Absolutely.
All right. Bye-bye.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. Israel sending